This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
I'm sick with this, I'm sick with this. Since you wasn't the fun, life just missed. My own sweet time didn't teach what I found. I didn't recognize simple things anymore. I don't wanna be defeated, I don't wanna be defeated, I don't wanna be defeated.
What's up, my sinners? Welcome. Welcome back to another episode of the podcast. I am your host, as always, Shane Told, and it is very, very nice to have you on this fine Tuesday. And I gotta say, you guys are always getting in touch with me, and I love it. I get so many emails. By the way, let's just throw it out there, weedsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I get so many requests for so many guests. And this band today, 4 years strong, has got to be one of, if not the most requested guest ever. And yes, it's finally happening. We tried to do this 2 years ago on Warped Tour. We tried to figure out a time to do it over the phone, but it happened this year on Warped Tour, and I'm so happy to bring it to you. This is a super open, super honest discussion with Dan and Alan. I'm so happy that we finally got it done, and I can't wait for y'all to hear it. Before we get into that, some sad news, very sad news. Kyle Pavone of We Came as Romans, if you haven't heard, has passed away, and the details are foggy right now, but it is very, very, very sad, and he's a former guest of the show, friend of the show, a friend of mine. All the We Came as Romans guys in Silverstein, we've been very, very tight for years doing so many tours. We brought them out when they were a young band. They returned the favor when they, you know, surpassed us and did their big headline tour. We've done Warped Tour together, and we were just in Europe together in April. So very shocking, and I'm at a loss. I know a lot of other people are struggling as well, and it is very, very sad news. And just want to say, rest in peace, Kyle. You will be missed. As for me, I am taking some well-needed time off the road, but not that long. We are gearing up for another tour. Silverstein is heading over to Europe with our friends in Antiflag and Cancer Bats. That will be a lot of fun. And after that, we're doing a 15-year anniversary tour of our first album, When Broken is Easily Fixed, playing the entire record from start to finish. We're going all over the place, and the tickets are selling like freaking hotcakes. I am not just saying that. In fact, we were able to move the Philadelphia room from TLA up to the beautiful Fillmore. So if you're in Philly, that show, well, it was almost sold out, and then they moved it up just in time. So there are tickets available for that, but I don't know how long they're going to last. And shows are selling like crazy all over the place. So check out whenbrokenisEasilyFixed.com. You can get all your tickets there, VIP. And of course, we have some great support bands. Our friends in Hawthorne Heights, As Cities Burn, and Capstan will all be performing. It is going to be a great time, not to be missed. Check it out. Again, that link is whenbrokenisEasilyFixed.com. A big shout out to my sinners, members of the Weed Singer Syndrome All Access Club. You know who you are. I know who you are. Just wanted to say hello. If you're interested in more content, more episodes, bonus episodes, more interaction with me, other fans of the show, go check it out, leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. That's all I'm going to say about it this week. That is it. Check out that link, leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. If you want to help the show, that is the best way to do so. All right, I know you've been waiting for this one for a long time, so let's get to it. Here's my conversation on the Warped Tour with Alan and Dan of 4 Years Strong.
Check.
It's been a long time coming, but we're finally doing this podcast. I'm here with Dan and Alan of 4 Years Strong on the Warped Tour. And for me, weird show, because it's our last one.
Last one ever?
Yep.
We're leaving. Yeah, we're leaving. We're in New York.
Tomorrow's our last one ever.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, because I was going to ask you about yesterday being in Massachusetts. That must have been, I know you had like, I saw you with like your kids. And
yeah,
family,
yeah, yep.
And that must have been just a surreal, weird experience. How did that feel knowing it was your last, I mean, your last hometown and then a couple
right.
more and then that's it forever?
It was pretty weird.
Yeah, it felt pretty cool. Like the show went really well and the kids were awesome. So like in retrospect, I'm like, okay, good. I was saying to him today, like today and probably tomorrow, I kind of feel like it's like the last week of high school. Like nobody gives a shit. Like we're like, yeah, yesterday was the big, like the finals, and now we're just running out the clock. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and, I mean, I had a great time. It was definitely like one of the best shows of the tour.
Yeah,
it was. It was awesome. I mean, and Massachusetts is always good. I mean, I know you guys have like a crazy following. I think
right.
people from Massachusetts. Yeah. Massachusettsians?
Yeah.
What are they called?
I don't know.
Massholes.
Nailed it. Yeah, I think they really take care of their own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We felt the love, but you guys have definitely felt the love. So.
Yeah, being from Massachusetts, I mean, it's already a very strong musical scene. I mean, like, so many bands came out of Massachusetts, and, you know, it's just such a musical area. I mean, you got Berkeley and Boston, and like even like not even like scene related. It's just a big musical place, and I just think that, you know, when we came out and we really kind of trumpeted that we were from Massachusetts, like it's something that
we really punished the hell out of playing Massachusetts.
Yeah,
when we were first starting, of course, like, yeah, just played
and
every possible place.
It's, you know, it's just kind of, we were embraced, and they just have never let go, and it's awesome.
Now, a lot of bands on this tour, and I'm sure it's been happening since the first date, and I wasn't on the first date, but, and I'm sorry, this devil with the penis in your van is like, in your bandwagon is
he
like,
also has all
very
of,
distracting.
He also has all of our hospital wristbands from various tours, because he always goes right back in that
really
spot when
I
get back
on. But it's literally like the devil is jerking off on us. It's, quite.
This is from when Trojan used to come out on Warped Tour and teach you how to put condoms on. Yeah, this is Trojan Steve's.
It's a styrofoam.
Doohickey.
Anyways, sorry, I had to say something. Yeah. Early on.
The best part is that the head is by us, custom painted pink.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Wow. Good work there. No, I'll take a picture of this. Remind me. I'll put it on the Instagram so people can know how distracting this was for me. But a lot of bands on this tour, you know, since day one, I'm sure they're like, it's the last, like, even the first date of this tour, they're like, it's the last Warped Tour. We're going to, you know, thanks to Kevin Lyman. Were you guys really, like, kind of harping on that the whole time, knowing it was the last one? Because it is the last one for every person at the show.
Right.
But I'm sure now you're starting to feel the emotion. And for me today, I really felt, like, I really did feel
well,
like
we definitely
weird
felt
vibe.
It yesterday.
I felt it a lot yesterday. And also, I think, we haven't been one of the bands that's been like, this is it. Like, we're, you know, we're done after this, just because we've done it a lot of times and it still feels like it always has felt to me.
Yeah.
So it's not really, it hasn't really felt like the end yet to me. But after yesterday, and like my daughters came out, and it was the first time my youngest daughter had seen our band play.
How old are your daughters?
So my oldest, Abigail, is 4, and then my youngest, Eleanor, is 2. And Eleanor fell asleep like 3 songs into the set, which was awesome. But it was the first time she had seen me play, and my other daughter had only seen us play one other time, and that was also at Warped Tour. And it was just, that was kind of like a thing that was like, wow, it's crazy that like they've only both seen me play one time each, and it's been on this tour because I played before their bedtime.
Of course.
So, but yeah, I think
there's
that was like
about
a big
this,
thing.
It seems more conducive. More conducive to a family environment? Not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah.
But for some reason, maybe it's just because it's during the day.
Yeah, my favorite quote from my daughter yesterday is like, Daddy, why does that girl have no shirt on? And I'm like, I have no idea. I'm sorry.
You're just walking around with no clothes on.
Yeah.
It's like the first show I ever went to was Metallica. It was Metallica
Suicidal
Tendencies.
That's a great first show.
Yeah, Metallica, Danzig, and Suicidal Tendencies.
Wow.
So the first band I ever saw was Suicidal Tendencies.
That's awesome.
That's great.
And my older sister, 7 years older than me, took me to the show, and she said to me, you're going to see some stuff, and you're going to smell some stuff. I was like, I was 11 or 12. And, you know, and I can't even imagine a 4-year-old, like, what do you say? Like,
yeah. She was really blown away by all the different colored hair. Like, she kept, like, looking for different colors. She's like, oh, there's a green one. She was, like, collecting Pokemon to her. She was like, oh, a purple one, a pink one. Yeah, so
that's great. That's awesome. Yeah, you guys are both family men. It's cool. I know you run a Christmas tree farm with your wife.
I do,
which is adorable. How is that balance, you know, between doing what we do, being on the road, and just kind of taking care of your family and your children and everything? I'm not married. I don't have any kids, so
I don't have any kids. But I mean, honestly, I think you have a lot more flexibility in this type of job, even mm-hmm. though at times you don't have any flexibility at all. But in a way, because you kind of work at your own schedule, you can have a lot of stuff going on the side, I feel like.
Right.
Especially seasonal stuff for you.
Right. Well, true. And that's the genius of what you're doing with the
Christmas
farm.
Anyway.
That's very cool, yeah.
Yeah. But it's fun.
Yeah.
I don't know why we do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember I was having a conversation with Buddy from Census Fail, and he's like, well, yeah, it sucks. Like, I go away for 6 weeks, but when I'm home, I'm like home.
Yeah. That's, yeah.
You know, I don't,
exactly.
Because, like, let's be honest, and I know you guys went through a period where people thought your band was breaking up.
Yeah.
But we basically did.
Yeah, we were pretty close.
It was it wasn't like an announced kind of
thing. Like, we didn't talk about it. We weren't like, hey, let's break up. We just kind of, we got home from a tour.
I had one phone call.
Yeah.
It was like, all right, we might as well just break up then.
Yeah.
But it was kind of just like a, all right, well, fuck you.
Yeah. Like, we were just grumpy at each other for a while. And what we needed was.
It was your disagreement. You two.
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of everyone.
Yeah, it was everybody. We just needed time off. We just toured ourselves into the ground and we were just with each other. And I mean, I've said it a million times. When you're in a band with somebody, it's like being married, but you don't get to have sex. So it's like a nightmare. Like, you know what I mean? It's all the worst things and none of the good stuff. But, you know, I think taking the time off was exactly what we needed, because in that time that we took, I think we all did the exact amount of growing up that we needed to do to be able to go back and look at what we've been doing and look at, you know, kind of retrospectively look at everything and then come back and be like, all right, I'm down if you are. And everybody was. So I think we just kind of, like, we didn't break up, but, like, you know, we weren't, for all, you know, for all purposes, we did break up because we weren't playing together. We weren't really talking or doing anything. But I think it was kind of a really good way to just get our management and our booking agents to be like, oh, you know, let's just leave them alone for a little while. Let's just, hopefully they can figure it out.
Right.
And that's kind of what we did.
I feel like you guys had a lot of pressure on you being, you know, you guys came up very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Your first album had a lot of success, and it's still an album that you guys still celebrate.
Yep.
And your fans
love
it.
We just did the 10-year anniversary
last
year.
And then your second record. And I mean, and of course, you were also like on, you know, Pete Wentz's label.
Yeah.
How was that working?
It really wasn't.
I feel like that's a whole thing.
It wasn't a thing. That's okay. It was, because we were on I Surrender Records, what Rise or Die came out on. And then we got signed to Universal Motown. To do our Enemy of the World.
Yes.
And basically, we felt we didn't want to leave I Surrender in the dust, because they had kind of been the label that found us, put in all this work, and, you know, and Rob Hitt is the guy who owns I Surrender. He played drums in that band Midtown. He was just awesome.
And he was our, after being on his label, was our manager.
He was our manager for a while, and so we didn't want to leave him in the dust. So we kind of like worked out with them that we could be on both labels. And then when we went to our management company, which was Crush, they also, you know, with Pete's label, was kind of like all in-house. And they were just like, listen, if you guys are on this label too, we can get a lot more like work done easier. And they're like, so can we just put the label on your thing? We're like, yeah, I don't care. Like, we never signed anything.
It was more or less they just slapped
like,
the logo on the back of the album.
But it's still, I mean, obviously there was some pressure still with these people involved. And Crush Management was, I don't know, a big deal.
Yeah.
It's even bigger now.
Even bigger now, yeah.
Yeah, it's you know, so there was all these things coming. Do you think, you know, and I know there was turmoil with your old keyboard player.
Yeah.
You know, you had to fire him. It seemed like there's a lot of pressure, and you put out a record, people, like your fans, it's like different.
Yep.
It was a lot of pressure, but it was also
contributed, right?
Yeah, it was pressure, but I don't know if I would describe it as pressure, but it was more so just like a series of unfortunate events.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
Like,
well, I just,
like the timing in which we decided to part ways with our keyboard player and put out a record that was very different and like
also not 100%.
Came out on a different label because our Universal Motown folded while we were making the record, and we got picked up by their sister label, Universal Republic.
Which right off the bat was a nightmare because even while we were in the studio, they were basically like, we're going to put this record out and then you're done. Like, we're not going to. So we knew they weren't going to put a lot into the record.
Yeah, it's
just
going to.
You know, so it stunk because, like, before the record came out, we all kind of knew, like, this isn't going to do much because the label's not going to push it.
Well, because everyone that was on Universal Motown was in limbo of either getting dropped or getting picked up by the sister label, and we were like crossing our fingers that we would get dropped because we had a 2-album deal.
Yeah,
we would have got like a payout, but they were like, "Oh, you're already halfway through making the record, and
totally
finish it, and just in case they sell a million albums, and if they don't, we'll drop them."
Yeah,
of course.
And that's exactly what happened. But literally, I think it was 2 months after the record.
But
came
we're
out.
Talking about what year is this? 2000.
That was 2011.
Right, and in 2011. There's no way like a punk band is selling a million records.
No.
Yeah, no.
So it was that's the thing. Like they'll sign those labels were trying to sign bands to deals that they were doing in like 2003, 2004 when bands were literally like actually selling.
Yeah,
they were throwing shit at a wall and see what sticks.
And then now it's like you guys come around and you guys probably not going to get radio play.
Yeah. No.
And like if you don't, that's okay on an indie label.
Yeah.
If you don't on a major label, it's like
you failed.
The fucking world.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
So that's a big thing. So I mean, I'm just saying all these things are
it was a perfect storm for sure.
Pressure than a band on, I don't know, pick a label, Equal Vision or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They still are on Warped Tour and they're still doing great, but they don't have that kind of pressure
cuz
you don't have these suits and all these people trying to keep their jobs with this high overhead.
Right.
In
yep.
some office, you know,
I've
in
always
New York
heard
City.
That like I've heard people. I don't have any experience with major labels other than the very.
Yeah.
Actually, between the two major labels we're on, Universal Motown and Universal Republic, I had a great experience and a freaking terrible experience. So I think we saw both
within
sides
of it. 2-year span. So it's kind of crazy,
right? Like, but I think what people say, and I feel like is kind of true, that major labels, what they don't have, what they don't do. What they're not good at is artist development.
Right.
It's like they just hope that something magic happens, and when it doesn't, they're like, all right, next. And that's what indie labels do. They, like, find something that they like, that they think people will like, and they help make it bigger and better.
Totally.
And
they run it into the ground, even if it takes 5 or 6
years.
And that does happen.
Records get worse and worse.
That
and
does
sell
happen.
Less and less, but they're like, we still love you guys.
Yeah.
You know who's a great example of that? Because we toured with them for so many years before they like really like blew up was freaking Pierce the Veil.
Totally.
Like, they were around forever.
What a great example.
And they're such great guys, and they great musicians, and they worked their ass off for years and years and years. And it just, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they just skyrocketed.
Out of nowhere. And you know what's funny is that
I don't want to say out of nowhere. Like, they worked their
They were beating
off.
The ground for a long time.
But you know,
I remember that first record coming out on Equal Vision and just thinking, like, this band's awesome. Like, this is really, really good. This band's going to be big. And then they just weren't. And then their second record came out and it was like, just kind of like, you know, plateauing.
Yeah, it was steady.
A
like,
little bit. And
like
then
we were
I think
peers.
They switched labels, right? And not to throw Equal Vision under the bus, I think they went to Fearless.
Yeah.
And we took them on a tour, and it was a B-Market tour. And it was we were headlining, and it was Miss May I and Pierce the Veil, and they were like flip-flopping the direct support.
Yep.
And on that tour, we started seeing people were coming out. And it was like they were coming out like making signs.
Okay.
You know, making t-shirts that said Pierce the Veil and like, will you marry me, Vic? And like, I was like, okay, something's happening.
Yep.
And like 6 months later, biggest band in the scene.
Yeah.
Whatever. And you're right. It's like they just put in the hard work and eventually people caught on.
Yeah.
Yeah. We
and
did.
Kudos to those labels.
They give me hope.
It's still coming.
Yeah.
It's still coming.
Yeah. One of these days, I also will have as many Instagram followers as Vic.
Yeah, geez, what's he got? He's got to have.
He's got over a million for sure.
Well over a million.
Yeah.
So let's talk about. We talked a little bit about Massachusetts, and I didn't tell the story I was going to tell about first Warped Tour, which I'll just throw in right now as we're going to talk about Worcester and where you guys grew up. But so we had put out our first record in May of 2003, mm-hmm. And we weren't like a cool band. You know, we were on Victory Records, which is always a stigma there. And we came.
Are you still on Victory Records?
We are not.
Oh, nice.
We did four records, though. But we, yeah, it was a time. So we came and we got asked to play this one show, one off, on the Vans Warped Tour in Massachusetts, Brockton, Massachusetts.
Yep.
And it was on the hardcore stage.
Yeah.
And we didn't know what that was. I was like, oh, that's crazy.
Who else was on the hardcore stage?
I remember the Red Chord.
Okay.
I remember Nora.
Okay.
Nora.
Jeez. I want to say maybe Hope's Fall, but I can't.
Sure.
I can't recall.
They just put out a new record.
And yep. They did. They did. I'm supposed to have Jay on the podcast, actually. Anyway, so we get there, and I remember rolling up, and they go, are you guys Arms Bend Back? This was this new Trustkill signing.
Yeah.
Sure, no one remembers them.
I don't.
And we're like, no, we're Silverstein. And they're like, oh, yeah, park way back there. okay, thanks. So this, I'll never forget this, like, guy comes over. It's like hardcore guy, kind of scary. He's like, so, you guys are playing first. I'm like, well, we were told that we were supposed to play at, like, 2:30. Like, no, you guys are playing first, which is, like, looks at his watch, like, now.
Yeah.
Like, okay, whatever.
You know? Yeah.
So this is funny, too, because we didn't have a tent.
Sure, yeah.
We didn't have a table.
Yeah.
We literally sold shirts on the grass with our van bench seat for chairs.
That's awesome.
Nice.
That's what we did. And so we go, and we're setting up, and the doors aren't open, and playing on this like sort of makeshift shitty stage that's not on the schedule or anything. Yep. It's just in the corner. But it was right by where they let people in.
Okay.
So they let all these... So they start letting people in at, like, at the, when the doors opened, like, you know, let's say it was 11 or 12 o'clock. And they wouldn't let them all the way in because the show wasn't ready.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So they let them into this sort of waiting area where the only thing going on was us playing on that stage.
Oh, that's awesome. Pretty cool.
We must have played, like today. It was like today.
Yeah.
Because all these people that came early, they let in. It was crazy. It was the most people we'd ever played for years after that.
Yeah.
And
that's awesome.
Great. It was a great show.
That's awesome.
Off to a great start.
And we come off. And then I think, I don't remember the band after us, maybe it was Arms Bend Back, they played next, and there was like, I counted, 7 kids watching. And we were like, all right, well, that's what you get for just shutting your mouth and being like, not fighting, and be like, all right, sure, like, we're just, you know, new people.
That's awesome.
So that was our first, in Massachusetts, 2003.
We actually have a similar story to that. We're on our first full Warped Tour. So we did our first show in 2007 on Warped Tour.
We played just in Massachusetts,
but then in 2008, we did the whole tour. We did the first 2 weeks of it on this little tent called the Playwork Productions tent, which is similar to like the Transform tent. Like, it's kind of just like a white tent.
It did have a stage.
It did have a stage.
It had maybe a foot high stage.
Yeah.
Like, but probably not. Was it not affiliated with Warped Tour? Like, you weren't on the big schedule?
No, not at all.
And so no one really knew.
Exactly.
They'd have to just walk around the whole park to try to find
We played that stage for 2 weeks, and then the rest of
it. But that
was
right after. That was like the summer after. The first summer after our first record, Rise of the Trying, came out.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was like already doing pretty well at the time. So the 2 weeks were like pretty crazy.
Yeah, well, we did those 2 weeks, and then after that, we were on Smart Punk for the rest of it.
Yeah.
Which was like the
which we,
like
so
the
we were really excited
stage.
To do this? That. This is 2008.
Okay.
And so we did we're doing the small little tent thing, and then in Detroit it was I think maybe like a week into the tour or something, we were the last band on that stage, but also the last band playing that day. Like, after main stage was done, after everything. So I remember All American Rejects was playing. Oh no. All American Rejects played, and then it was like the something corporate, but
Jack's Mannequin.
Yeah, Jack's Mannequin was playing while we were setting up, and then we played like one song, and after we played the one song, he finished, and as we were playing, everyone had to walk by the stage to get out.
Right.
And it was
everyone just decided
to stop and stay and watch the band.
Well, because I think it was also because, like, for some reason, the shows at that tent were just absolutely crazy. Like,
well, the kids that were showing up that knew our band were going off. It was like a 4-year show. But all these kids stopped, and I remember that's when we met all the security that works for the tour. We still know them to this day because that when they were like, "All right, we're going to start sending people over to this tent."
Yeah, they'll like remember that time.
Yeah.
Well, because they still talk about like every day that year that like they'd never have to go to those other tents for any reason.
Yeah,
but and it's every day. We were on
they
that
had to
tent.
Pull people
they had
off
to
main.
Find out what time we were playing first thing in the morning so that they'd make sure they had enough security at the stage because there was no barricade.
Sure.
Yeah.
Of course. I'm surprised they didn't move you. It happened to us, too, and I think it was 04 we did, and we were on, well, it was called the Kevin Says stage, but not the big Kevin Says stage.
Right, right.
It was in like, Sponsor World. So, like, you have all the merch tents, and then the sponsors, like, fucking Fuse or Roadrunner Records or whatever, you have these tents. So it was in one of the bigger tents, but still a tent in the merch. So people are just walking by trying to get free stickers.
Yeah.
There's a band playing.
Yeah.
And we had, and it happened to us where we played, then we had a lot of people come over, and they couldn't, because there's no, it was, like, on the ground.
Yeah.
So I remember I climbed up on the speaker so people could kind of see.
Yeah.
And at the end, I, like, jumped off the speaker or whatever.
Yeah.
And they came over after, they came to our bus, and they said, I thought we were in trouble. I thought it was like I was getting in trouble for jumping off the speaker.
Yeah.
And they're like, we just want to let you know, you're never playing that stage again. You're on like the Volcom stage now. Like,
oh,
the,
cool.
The, like,
nice.
Actual
That's awesome.
Real stage. And that was like, I think in my career, I've never like been happier.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I've never felt like redemption or like, oh my God, like, holy shit, people actually like my band and we're actually like, you know, it
and
was
you're
like,
seeing
people
results.
Always say, oh, When did it hit you that you like made it? And I'm like, maybe that moment.
Yeah,
you know,
that's awesome.
So. Anyways, we've talked so much. This is great. How it's jumped around. I've really enjoyed it. But
we have another weird story about the very first Warped Tour we ever played, which was the one day in Massachusetts in 2007. We got in a little fender bender, like while we were like trying to figure out where to park and everything in our van, and the person we hit. Our bass player's name is Joe.
I got a beer over there, actually.
Our bass player's name is Joe Weiss. And the person we hit when we like exchanged information, also Joe Weiss. And I thought that
was also a fan of the band,
thing.
So he was like, "Oh, don't worry about it."
Yeah,
we were like, "Okay, good."
We don't have any money anyway, so barking up the wrong tree.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah, that happened to me once. I've had a few. I should talk about it. They're not stories I want people to know. I regret some
things.
We got
some of those, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll talk
driving
about it after
the corner
we shut
New
off
York
the microphones.
City with the trailer. Oops.
Didn't you do that in New York City?
Do
didn't
what?
You didn't you clip somebody with the... Oh, it was the van.
It was just the van.
The
no trailer.
The van.
You know, like, the on the passenger vans, there's, like, the hinge kind of, like, sticks out on the,
oh,
on
yeah,
the side
yeah,
door?
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't a slider. It was a double door. The hinge, like, sticks out like this. I like was taking a corner and, or I forget exactly what happened, but somehow
that's like a millimeter, dude.
No, dude, it sticks out pretty far.
Oh, does it? Okay, like an inch though. Still, like an inch.
But somehow that inch just got shoved into an Escalade and just like tore a huge hole in it.
And what did you do?
Pulled over, exchanged information, and the woman was super nice, and we never heard anything about it.
Yeah,
like she never reached out. She never reached out to our insurance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy. No, I one time had a guy was driving New York City and like see that's the thing. When you first tour New York City and you're in a van, it's the biggest pain in the fucking ass. You're like, hate this place.
Oh,
I never want to come back.
It's a nightmare.
Now I love it because I don't have to worry about parking.
Yeah.
But I remember literally almost running over a pedestrian because I wasn't paying attention and him trying to punch me through the window while I was driving.
Nice.
So
that's good.
But anyways, dude. So let's go back. I know we've already been talking for 24 minutes, but the beginnings of the band, and you guys are Pride Massachusettsians, and I'm just gonna say that's what it is.
Yep.
From Worcester, and Worcester is a pretty cool place because it's like as blue collar as it gets.
Yeah. It's becoming a lot cooler.
It
and
is.
Hipper.
It's becoming kind of hipster now.
Yeah, it is. But it definitely wasn't back
but growing
then.
Up, you know, it was like this real American city, and but also a place that has had and has.
Nice.
It's okay. It's just
He's
a water.
Just knocked
just
water.
Had and has like an incredible scene.
Yeah.
Mostly due to the fact that the venue, the Palladium's there.
Yep.
And a venue that is world famous, and I'm sure a lot of people, even outside, you know, the tri-state area, call it what, or New England, whatever, know about it. I remember going there in like 2001 for New England Metal and Hardcore Festival.
Yep,
like
of course.
Before
still happens.
I was ever on tour. So it's a famous place. So what was it like growing up there? Like, you can start with kind of your family lives and stuff, but then how there was this kind of amazing, you know, community of underground music.
Well, the plating was always freaking the best because at the time when we were like first starting to see shows, bands played there like more bands that we wanted to see anyway.
More
were playing
Boston.
More than Boston because Boston didn't have any all ages venues.
Yeah.
At the time they just had like Axis and Avalon and Paradise, and at the time they were all 18 plus.
ICC
21
Church,
plus.
I think was a thing yeah. back then.
I don't know about way back then. That was me.
I think it might have been, but that also Boston and Worcester scenes were so separated.
Really?
Yeah. There wasn't like there were like Worcester kids. Or like Central Mass kids, and like
I never
and
went
were like,
to Boston.
Yeah, I never went to Boston.
Really?
Well, I did a couple times.
I never,
but only for like really special shows, and they're always the most terrifying ones.
Yeah, and I went to my first shows ever at the Palladium. Like I went with my dad to see BB King. That's the first live
what band?
BB King.
Oh wow,
that was the first live music experience I ever had when I was very young, and the very next thing was Saves the Day. In the same room.
Crazy.
Saves the Day. I think it was Saves the Day, Get Up Kids, the Anniversary.
The Vagrant Tour.
And Dashboard Hot Rod opens. Circuit. Or Dashboard. Some combination of those bands. I don't remember which
one. I remember Dashboard opened.
Yeah.
That was the first time I saw Dashboard. And I bought that Swiss Army.
Swiss Army Romance
CD nice. That day. There's only two bands that I've ever, like, that I remember being like, I gotta go buy this CD. And one was Dashboard. And the main reason why I bought it is because I liked it and he was getting booed like crazy.
Wow.
And I was like, I gotta get this guy's CD. So I bought that CD. And then the only other time I've done that is first time I saw The Hope Conspiracy. I bought their like demo.
Crazy.
Yeah.
The first time I saw, I love these tangents. The first time I saw Dashboard Confessional, we had this real, like, it was just a hall in my suburban Toronto town. This mm-hmm. was in Oakville, Ontario, called the Pine Room.
I know. Oakville.
We had a promoter that was, he just, I don't know, he was kind of in the scene, and we'd get like bands, we'd get like some pretty good bands. I remember we had like by Piebald and Small Brown Bike put a show one
That's
time.
That's cool.
Nice.
And we had like 18 Visions and Throwdown come. Like this
nice.
Is just in this little hall.
Yeah.
And we did this festival. I don't say what we, he did it. I was just a kid, but it was called, it had a great name. I forget now. It escapes me. It doesn't matter. We had this festival, and I think it was Midtown
okay.
was playing or headlining it or one of the top bands, and their merch guy had this acoustic thing and asked the promoter, my friend, Eric Hoyback, if he could play. He was like, oh, it's like open or something. He was like, okay. So it was Dashboard Confessional.
Nice.
That's cool.
So this guy went up there, and I remember like seeing him play, being like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah.
Like, this is incredible.
Guy's got some pipes, yeah.
And then him playing, and it was, like, the talk of the town, and I don't even know, like, no one knew who he was yet.
Yeah.
And the funniest part of it to me was, I guess, after the show was, like, all done and everything, Chris Caraba came up to him and was like, hey, man, can I get up, get paid? He's like, what? No, you, like, just asked to play. He's like, oh, well, just, like, I don't know, like, some, like, I don't know, like, some, like, gas money or something. He's like, you're riding with Midtown. Like, no.
That's
no.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Funny he had the nerve to ask, but, yeah, so.
I like
so
that.
That's good.
That's right.
Yeah. So, with me, I grew up, like, the first shows that I went to, I actually hadn't gone to the Palladium. There was a place called the Espresso Bar in Worcester. That I went to like my first like shows, like scene shows. My first one was like Converge, Cave-In, One
oh,
King
nice.
Down, and
One King Down's
40
playing
Days
today.
Rain.
One
yeah,
King Down
I know.
Is playing today. This is hardcore. In
I know it's
our,
crazy.
Our friend Moose, he's a driver, went down
yep.
to Philly.
He was
to
trying
see
to get
him.
Me to go, but we played too late, so I couldn't go. But yeah, so I remember when that place got shut down, and like the you know hardcore shows were getting moved to the Palladium. I remember like. My little core friends were all kind of like grumpy about it. Like before we went there, we're like, "Oh, this place isn't going to be as good as this place was." And then we went and we're like, "Oh, this place is awesome. It sounds good. That's amazing."
Cool.
But yeah, I went to my first Palladium show. The reason why I didn't know that is because I didn't know there was an upstairs venue that was smaller.
Yeah.
So the first time I went to the Palladium, actually, I went with like my sister when I was like younger to see Everclear, Marcy Playground, and Fastball. And
like
I went
Sex and Candy Band.
Yeah, and that was the first time that was the first time I went to the Playdium, and it was like this giant, like huge room.
Yeah.
So then when they're like, oh, like the random little small hardcore shows moving, I'm like, that's gonna suck. The stage is like. To me, I'm like, it's like 8 feet tall. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to... But then we went to the upstairs, and I was like, oh, this place is actually kind of cool. And I actually ended up in high school, I ended up working at the Playdium for like, I don't know, 6 months or so, just like being a bouncer.
Oh, wow.
Because I like... kind of got in trouble there too many times. They're like, either you can't come anymore or you have to work here. And I was like, okay, I'll work. Yeah. So
that's funny. What were you guys like in high school? You know, bringing it up, were you guys like kind of regular guys? Were you into sports?
Oh, no.
No, we were in this band. No,
yeah, we were just in this band.
So you were like the music kids. Everybody knew you as the
I was like the fucking emo king, dude.
Yeah, you're pretty cool.
I was awful.
You had the hair swoop stuff.
Yeah. So you guys went to high school together.
Yeah.
So you guys have known each other and been friends for a very long time.
Yeah, we've been a band since I was a freshman in high school.
Yeah, we started 4 years strong.
And it was called
4 years strong. In 2001, yeah.
There must be some very embarrassing
terrible songs. And like random kids would be like, oh, play this song, and I'm like, you need to cut that out.
Do you wish you changed your name at some point?
Absolutely.
Totally. I mean,
also because it's a terrible name.
But at some point, like,
it's not, but I have no idea what it could possibly mean.
Well, we didn't either. I mean, like, there's a Get Up Kid lyric on 4 Minute Mile that's 5 years strong, and we're like, let's just take that, but we can't want to steal it, so let's just change the number to 4. That's where it came from. 100%.
That's the real story.
That's the 2001 freshman in high school naming a band.
Perfect.
Story.
Love that.
And it just kind of stuck. But I mean, I've compared it to in the past. Like, people are like, oh, like, we want you to play your older songs. I'm like, that's like you going up to like somebody who's like this famous painter and being like, I liked it when you were like 4 years old and painted little red houses with a sun in the sky and random trees. And I'm like,
you were not wrong. That's like actually a great analogy.
You know what I mean? And I was like, and I want you to paint stuff like that again. It's like, well, that's not, I physically can't do that anymore. You know what I mean? Like,
yes. But there's a, not a fine line, a major difference between that and somebody being like, hey, you know your first major label record, and you guys, and some bands like, oh god, we hate that stuff, like we've retired those songs. I always hate when bands do that.
Yeah. I hate that too. It's like, I know what you're saying, like it's like a fine line, but it's also not a fine line, because like there are stuff that we feel like we've grown out of, you know, songs we don't really love to play. But to me, all it comes down to is if the crowd actually wants to hear it, I want to play it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's those songs that
one kid on Instagram says, hey, play this song. And you're like, if I play that song, you're the only one in the room who's going to know that song.
And everyone else is just going to be like, what is this? And then they'll wait for because the song and start going crazy.
Because we've done it before.
Yeah.
We've been like, you know what? We're playing at the Worcester Holiday Show this year. We're going to break out some really old B-side songs for, like, you know, the kids who have been there forever. And then we play it, and you see, like, this one guy on the balcony freaking out, and, like, six kids being like, yeah! And, like, everybody else is like,
everyone's
I don't
like,
know this
oh,
song.
Shit, this is a great time to take a piss and
exactly,
get a beer.
Exactly, yeah. I'd be like, yeah, I'll go get a beer.
No, exactly.
Yep.
Exactly.
And then there's some stuff that, like, I don't even consider to be the same band. Like you know, we started so young, and we basically, other than the name and the people, we were different bands, like, when we first started.
I mean, just like every other kid, you're just like, I want to be a band that sounds like this band today, and I want to be in a band that sounds like this band today.
So, like, we have, like, our very early stuff was, like, very, like, for This Seems Forever.
Yeah.
Slash, like, I don't know.
Lots of Chris Carrabble love today, huh?
Yeah,
yeah, that's true.
That's true.
Well, anyway, the moon is down. I mean, that's... Yeah.
Oh my god,
that's a great record.
Yeah,
I think that was the other reason why I bought Swiss Army Romance, because I knew
Fully Down.
Wow, boop. Further Seems Forever.
Of course. So, before that happened, did you guys feel? I guess this is a good question. I guess because you guys have been together for so long, and obviously there needs to be a certain alignment with you guys in terms of like where you want to take your direction of your lives,
right?
Because you're 14 years old or whatever in high school, and things get. You get better, or, you know, who's a better guitar player, by the way?
I don't know.
You guys argue about it? You're both really good.
Depends who you ask.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, like, we don't, We don't really do the like lead rhythm thing. We just switch off.
Like, no, I know, honestly, I know. That's why I'm wondering if there's ever like when you're in the studio, and again, we're going off, so I haven't changed, but when you're in the studio, it's like, hey, man, like, or is it kind of like you just play what you write?
Honestly, yeah. I'd say we're like pretty neck and neck.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing that I can do that he can't do, or he
So you guys
can
watch the same John
do.
Petrucci videos?
And yeah, exactly. Yeah. No.
We just, I mean, we basically kind of
started together.
Yeah, started together and have been together.
Cool. Well, that's the thing, and it's like a beautiful, you know, marriage, non-sexual marriage you guys have.
Yeah.
But at what point did you decide wherever it was, like, okay, we're actually going to fucking take this seriously. We are going to write good songs. We are going to...
We're still working on that part.
I kind of remember.
Like, what was it? Like, did you guys go to college? I guess not.
No,
we didn't.
So was there conversation of like, okay, this is the point where we're going to have to like go off and do real like...
Well, we from the get-go, we're kind of all in. Even when it wasn't, you know, we were still kids and didn't have the option of being all in because we had to be in school.
Yeah.
Any time that wasn't, you know, we weren't together. I mean, we practiced every single day. When we were in high school, that was like the thing. We're like, you go to school and everybody would walk to my parents' house.
Oh, your poor
and
parents.
We would play together every single day. And we would just practice for hours and hours. And
yeah, everyone
if we weren't practicing, we were working on logos or, you know, just like every other band. But I remember the first time that we were in, because we used to do this, it's a really silly thing, because we never really had a singer when we were in, like when we first started. We were always looking for a singer because Al and I were just guitar players.
Yes.
We were always looking for a singer. We would try out people. We get this guy that's like a friend and be like, don't wear such baggy pants.
It was never like, hey, this guy can sing. It's like, hey, here's a guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And who's willing to do this? And so I remember we made this decision where we're like, all right, Alan is going to sing and we're going to get another guitar player. And then we did that for a while. And then I remember we had this guy come who like tried out. And we were like, all right, we're going to show you some songs. Alan's going to play on the guitar. You can watch it. And then, you know, we'll see if you can, we'll try to teach you and see if you can play it. So then we played the song. And I remember he was over and he looked at me and he goes, why are you looking for another guitar player? Why don't you just both sing and play guitar? And we're like, I guess we could try that.
Is that just like the hardcore mentality that you need to be a five piece? You have like
Boston-style hardcore.
Yeah, and none of us were really like, we never had the like aspiration to be a singer. We had the aspiration to be like, you know, rock guitar guy.
You know what's
guy,
funny,
you know?
Man? And I've said this so many times, but I think I've done 140 episodes of the show, and like 120 of them, the singers I talk to never wanted to be a singer and still don't even think they're singers.
Yeah.
Right. Still feel like they're guitar players or drummers and I just...
Oh, I'm definitely a guitar player
even
first.
Even Tyler Carter. Yeah. I talked to him the other day. He's an old buddy of mine.
Yeah.
He's a great like singer, like almost like an R&B guy at this point. He's still like, well, I'm a drummer, you know?
Right. Yeah.
You're not a fucking drummer.
Yeah.
But it's so funny how that's just the way it works. Like,
yeah,
you're the only guy in the tune that... You're the only guy in the room that can carry a tune.
Right.
Default to singer. Luckily, well, it's funny you guys because had two that were pretty
we
good.
Were we were well, always the, like the first really time, into vocals.
Well, the first time we ever actually played the two of us was because we had no other choice. And it was because we had band practice the morning of a show, a local show, and the guy we had playing guitar in the middle of practice literally put his guitar on the ground, walked out the door.
And we didn't see him for years.
Didn't see him again.
We didn't see for years until so like 2 years later. I was like, show. "Can I get my guitar back?"
He's like, "To play the show, we wrote the songs, so we knew them, and we just like made it work." And then from then on, we were just like, "I guess, I guess that'll do."
That's funny. That reminds me of a quick story too. Like, we had this, we like borrowed this guy's like 412 cabinet, like a Marshall 412 or something. Yeah. Brought it over. It was like brand new because we were kids. We never toured.
Yeah.
And then we did something like hear from the guy. We took it on tour for like 5 years, no case, completely destroyed.
Yeah.
Calls us up one day. You guys still have that Marshall 1960 B cab?
Yeah, yeah.
We're like, yeah. It's just like
destroyed.
The ripped off. Like,
squatter's rights. So yeah. It's yours now.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. That's funny. You know what's also interesting, and I have, you know, you met my best friend the other day. He's a huge fan of you guys. He's like, I thought the band was one singer. Because you guys sound so similar when you sing. Yeah.
Especially over the years. Like, if you listen to those old high school demos, were very different. Dan, was you were a lot, like, nasalier.
Yeah.
And you could sing really high, and yeah. I couldn't.
So what, puberty's what happened?
A, puberty, man.
Yeah, honestly.
Just influenced each other
I think
somehow?
That's what it is. I mean, we just, like, similar to guitar style, as we've been playing together and singing together and playing guitar together like, for so long, you, like, that we're kind of morphing into the same person.
Yeah, you start to, like, look like...
Well, also, when we also both sing harmonies with each other when we're not singing lead. So...
Try to match, kind of
exactly.
Match, yeah.
Like we both grew up. Like we were in high school. We both sang in like the choir and like all that stuff together. So yeah. Like, and we were always obsessed with like harmony. It's one of the reasons why Midtown was one of our favorite bands, because their harmonies were just
great
unreal.
Harmonies.
And so we always knew that harmonies were going to be a big part of the band, which is why we wanted to play guitar and sing, because we could sing good harmonies with whoever was singing. That was like our plan.
We were in singing groups in high school together.
Yeah,
like okay. in the choirs and stuff.
Yeah. So you were into singing. Yeah.
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 And cool. I was just going to say something and it's gone.
No, that's what happens.
Oh, no, I remember. People probably don't realize, especially because our voices sound so similar, how crazy the switching between melody and harmony we do. Like within one chorus, you think you're hearing one person singing the melody and one person singing the harmony, but really it's like every three words... It's like, it's just, we're just switching back and
wow.
forth, like every line,
is
one
that all
person's.
Like, and that's all written, like you guys.
Yeah, we kind of plan it out.
We
because
do it, and we do it live. It would be easier to just not do it that way,
yeah,
but
I
we do it.
I don't know why, it's just kind of the formula that we've come across, because we wanted it to be a two-singer band, like, that's just what Four Year Strong is, so yeah. we didn't want it to, you know... sway one way or the other. We're just like, everything's kind of just split down the middle. If you start the verse, then that, like, if you start the verse melody, then I'm going to start the chorus melody, and the harmonies kind of work off of that. And it's the same with guitar. Like, if he's singing, you know, the main melody for a certain part of the song, and there's like a crazy lead, I'll take the lead, and then once I start singing, even if it's the same lead, it'll just switch back to him.
Yeah.
Like,
not always.
Well,
that
certain
happens
songs,
in a couple
like
songs.
It Must Suck,
yeah,
stuff like
yeah,
that.
Happens
you
in
know,
a
like
with songs. When you guys write, let's say you're just starting from scratch with a new record or something, like, what's your approach with writing? Because you guys are both, it's like I'm talking to the same person, obviously.
Yeah, not,
you know what I mean? Like, you guys are like, you're both singers, you're both guitar players. I don't know who's better. You know, you sound the same. So how do you guys approach that as writing?
Usually we just
with a riff.
Yeah, we just sit down and we just start riffing together and just trying to come up with ideas. We usually come up with like a nice little... plethora of riff ideas, and then that's where we kind of get the idea of where we want to go.
Do you guys have similar styles, like, or is one guy seemingly more of a heavy guy, one guy more into the melodic stuff?
Well, it's actually really weird, because a lot of times, if one of us finds a new artist that they like, it's the other person is gonna like it.
Yeah.
Like, we have very similar,
cool,
like,
yeah.
Taste in what
taste.
You know, you think is good.
I don't know why. Yes, I mean, right? Just because we've been joined to the hip for so long or whatever it is, but...
I would probably say...
I'm really glad I interviewed both of you guys together, by the way.
Yeah?
Because, if I did it separate, because sometimes I do it separate, I'd be like, okay, I have, like,
you'd probably
two
get
episodes are the fucking same.
Yeah, exactly. You get the exact same stories for both of us.
This is very cool. But
no,
yeah,
I would
sorry,
say
I
if we
off.
Had to pick, like, between the two of us, like, in the writing process... I'd say I'm like, and maybe you feel the same way I do just because, but the opposite. But like, I feel like Dan knows more, not knows more, but is a lot more conscious of making sure it's like, it's a Four Year Strong song. Where I'm the one that's like, we can just.
A little more experimental.
Yeah,
maybe?
A little bit more experimental, maybe. But really not even that much.
But that's a great dynamic to have.
Yeah.
Because if you were both just, we need to write Four Year Strong, then you're never going to evolve. And if you're both like, let's be crazy, then next thing you know, you're writing a Radiohead record.
Right.
You
know? Yep. Which would be so
really
fun.
Does.
That would be awesome.
God. We also have these conversations all the time. Where we're like, I just want to write this kind of record one time.
Yeah.
But it won't be with this band.
Yeah.
It'll be some other time.
Yeah. Because we've learned that. We put out a record that... I wouldn't say 100%, well, definitely not 100% by choice. There was a lot of it was us and influenced by like the label at the time and managers.
Producer.
And produced. Oh, yeah, the producer.
Who produced?
Yeah. We put out a record that...
Can I tell you a quick David Benz story?
Oh, I would love
I
to
would
hear
love it.
It.
If okay. we can get deep into that.
Yeah.
Because I got... I don't know if I can say this on the record. I don't know. But Dan gave me a thumbs down when I said David Benz. This is not a video interview. So,
yep.
But yeah, so my favorite David Benz story. So he was supposed to do our second record, which is like, you know, our big record.
Yep. Well, let me interrupt there. If David Benz is hearing this and doesn't know that we gave a thumbs down...
Right.
You're out of your freaking mind, dude.
Right. Well, this is my favorite David Benz story. So he's from New Jersey. He's Canadian, actually.
Yep.
Which is part of why we were going to make a record with
him.
But
he randomly has British accents. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay. So we were playing at the Starland Ballroom. Mm-hmm. I can't remember who was playing. And he's there side stage right before we're going to go on. And he's talking about this amazing record we're going to make. And he's a very, like, intense,
yeah,
like, loud, extroverted kind of guy.
Yes.
So he's there. Because
he was an A&R guy for like 16 years, so he's a schmoozer.
Right. It's that kind of thing. Yeah. So we get on stage, we play, and Josh, our guitar player, breaks a string. So he, you know, does what everyone does when you break a string. You hand your guitar to the guitar tech.
Yep.
Guitar tech gives you another guitar. While you're playing, your backup guitar puts the other string back on the other guitar so you can get your main guitar back.
Yeah.
Right? It's what you do.
Yep.
So Kevin, our guitar tech, does it. He's putting the guitar... string on. It's just like a fucking A string broke at the bridge. Like,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
No,
yeah.
Nothing he can't handle.
Classic story.
Yeah.
So he's putting the string on, and David Benz, I don't know if he's trying to like impress us or what, but he like pushed the guitar tech out of the way. He's like, what are you doing? You're doing this wrong. So our guitar tech's like, okay, man, whatever. Like he knows like this is supposed to be our producer. The record didn't happen, by the way. We worked with a different guy, but
good for you.
Maybe it was the best thing we ever did. And he comes, so he takes the... And the guitar players are going to love this. Other people might not understand, but... So, David Benz strings the guitar. And Kevin's like, all right, sure. Doesn't really check. Just like, okay, the guitar's on there. It's to tension. It's in tune. Or whatever. Hands it to Josh, and... He'd put the string on like the wrong way around the post.
Nice.
Oh,
so
yeah.
When you tune it, like you it have goes... to tune it the wrong way.
Yep.
Instead of like counterclockwise, like clockwise.
Yeah.
That was when I was like, maybe we shouldn't have this guy like
that
know, directing
like...
which way our career should go. Yeah. Our second
spot
album.
Spot on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the stories that I hear from other bands about him, and definitely was part of our experience, is like his. MO is he creates turmoil within the band,
yeah,
so that he can be the savior that brings it back together.
Interesting.
Which is similar to kind of what he was just doing with your band. He like
right, maybe.
Wanted to like throw himself into the mix to be the guy like
that saves yeah.
that
the day.
That could change, like no one else here could change a string right. So
I mean, there were numerous
right.
times where he was trying to turn Alan and I against each other, like on the sly, like he would tell me all the time. He'd be like, hey, Alan's in the room, can you just retrack this part that he did? I'm like, no.
That and he told
wow.
he told Joe that I'm the worst guitar player he's ever heard and I shouldn't be playing guitar in a band.
I heard story about Bendith, like guitar players playing and Bendith standing there with the drumstick hitting them on the hands every time they fuck up.
Oh, he didn't do that to us.
I heard about Paramore, I forget what record they made together, but
Riot.
They came in and he took the drummer's toms away, and he's like, you can get toms when you like learn how to like, you know, play properly or something.
Which is crazy
like that.
Because he is a great drummer.
Oh, I mean, I know. Yeah, he's back in the band. I just saw him ripping it the other week.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's the thing, I guess. And he's made like let's not like totally shoot him down. He's made some great records.
Yeah.
Whether it was him or the band or whatever, it's besides the point. But, you know, that was a big misstep, I guess, in your career, if I could be honest with you guys.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you guys are, you know, have recovered nicely with some of the stuff you've done since. But
I don't know how.
I guess that for you is probably, I mean, your biggest regret, I guess, as a band?
Yeah, I think.
But I also think that if we hadn't, I mean, I feel like the way that things were going within the band, within the management, within, like, label... something.
It would have gone poorly.
It would have gone poorly, right. I think, because, like I said, like things were not great interband wise at that point anyway, because we hadn't been apart from each other for any length of time in years and years and years, and we were on each other's nerves. Our heads weren't in the same space of where the band should go, what was all that. And I think it was a combination of, if we had chosen the right producer, that, like, for instance, we've worked with Machine numerous times. If we had gone with someone like Machine, the best part about Machine is that he makes you feel awesome about the band that you are, and he has the tight brain who can be like, this, like, when you play something, be like, that's 4 years strong. You're good. That's it. You know what I mean? Or, you know, oh, maybe we can get it. We didn't have anybody like that. We had somebody who heard our band and was like, everything that your band is bad. And we were we were just in the mind space of being like, I can't make any more decisions because my brain is just mush. I'm just going to trust you and management and label that we're all going to be like, that we're going to come out on the other side of this on the right side. And I think we all did that. And
well, for instance, we showed up the first day to record with a bunch of demos,
like you do, like
probably 20 or so songs. Not all finished per se, but yeah, you know, course. Like yeah. When you start a record, and he said, start over.
Scrapped them all.
What
Scrapped
do you mean?
Every single one of them. Not one
of them.
Did those
songs end up coming out in some way, shape, or form?
No.
Where are they now? They're just...
Oh, they're long buried.
Yeah. You've never tried to revisit them
the
maybe
only
as being
one
good ideas?
Cause that like, has, the only one that was resurrected as a completely different song, really, but just like kind of the chord changes and the...
Yeah,
melodies and stuff is Go Down in History, which is on our EP called Go Down in History,
and
it's
our
also
newest.
On the newest self-titled. But it was a completely different song. I understand why at the time he told us to start over, because I don't know. I guess I would say the record, if we went with those demos, it would have sounded like The Killers or something. Yeah,
it would have been weird.
It would have
still.
Been weird. Oh, interesting.
I mean, yeah. I think similar to what I was saying before, we were kind of all sick of each other. We were sick of even being sick of being the band that we were. Like, we hated being stuck in that bubble. Like, we right. felt like we closed ourselves into this square.
Into this and, really small one.
And with either our fans or ourselves or our management, we all just felt like if we took a step outside the square, everybody would be like, nope, you got to push it right back in. So we, for some reason, just were like, all right, we're doing everything out of the square. And I think we went in with that mentality going in there and kind of kept that mentality. And I don't know if it was like a weird self-destructive, like brain cell, like going off or whatever, but I don't know. We just, it was a weird time. A lot of crazy things going on.
Yeah, that's
all
why
at once,
I can't actually blame the failure of that record on anyone else, because I think no matter what, like Dan was saying before, it would have kind of gone that way.
Yeah.
If we had made the record that were on those demos that we had, it also would have been very different.
Yeah.
But the producer we ended up working with didn't see us as going like on the softer route. He wanted to be like a rock radio band.
Right.
Like, he had this vision for what we could be. And I think that's the problem. That's it's like the worst thing a producer could do, I think. Is,
we were also like,
is have this vision of what the band should be instead of what they are. I think the point is to try and like take the band and
bring
emphasize
them to their,
what
bring
they
them
are.
Their best, make them their best.
Yeah,
whatever their potential is.
Yeah, and I think
that,
we were right on the edge of adolescence and adulthood.
Yeah,
were right there.
So how old were you guys at that time?
So at that time, you were...
I think I was like 20, so I'm 30 right now.
Yeah.
And
it's 2018, and that was 2011, so 7 years before that.
Years ago. So yeah, I was 23.
You were 23, I was probably 26.
Yeah, it is, and that is a weird, kind of a weird time in your
and
life.
And I think that's what it was. I think, you know...
Damn, you guys were pretty young when you made those first two records.
Yeah, so when we were in there, I think, you know, we hadn't figured out how to be in a band as an adult. And I think that was what we were struggling with, is, you know, our home lives were very much going more the adult route. Like, I wanted to go home and get married. Like, you know what I mean? Like, all that stuff was coming up. Like, marriage and buying houses and things like that was starting to come up. But, like, everything with the band still felt very, like, like not adult. Like we just couldn't grow up in the band world. And I think that just
kind of back to the conversation we had earlier about like bands that don't want to play old songs because they're past that point in their lives. Like, unfortunately, that's kind of how we felt at the time.
We didn't know how to write like pop punk, that kind of music.
And be adults.
Like, I was like, I don't know how I'm going to write lyrics because no one wants to hear about me being like, yeah, everything's pretty good. Like, my home life. Like, you know what I mean?
Cool, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like I hadn't figured out how to be like, I don't know how to write something that people are going to relate to at this point. We're just kind of having like, I mean, obviously not a midlife crisis, but like kind of that same idea.
Well, sort of in a band sense, it sort of makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny you say that because I'd say with Silverstein, it was our third record too. That's our you know, catastrophe if we had one. Our third record, we worked with Mark Trombino, big time producer.
Yep.
That's always kind of a bad
reputation.
Yeah.
And we had a horrible experience. It's our worst record. It just is.
Yeah.
It just is our worst record. And luckily, we didn't try to change our sound, and he didn't try to change our sound. So it was still like the sort of the same trajectory.
Right.
But but it's like we made two records that were both pretty good. And it's like, okay, now what? You feel some pressure to do something different.
Right.
And you almost have to because you can't make the same record over and over again.
Well, what's funny about that record is, you know, a lot of our fans can like, most of our fans consider it our worst record. There are like random people who like say like, "Oh, it's my favorite record," and which is cool. I'd say more now than obviously back then. It was like a big thing. But damn it, where'd my thought go? It's gone. The thought's gone. I had a really good thing to say, and it's gone.
I'll bring it back some other time.
We'll think about it. Well, dude, we're almost at an hour mark. This has been an awesome conversation. I'm enjoying it. I hope you guys are too.
Yeah.
One thing about your band too is how you guys have a lot of diversity within your music, and you kind of have your own sound. And I feel like you've always fit in. What did I write here? You've kind of fit everywhere and nowhere.
I agree.
Right? Yeah. And you've done tours, like the last tour I saw you guys on was co-headlining with Less Than Jake.
Yeah.
It's a fucking ska band.
Yeah.
I also remember back in the day with, what was it, like Have Heart and Bane.
Yeah.
You've done things, you know.
We've done, tons of crazy stuff.
And how does that feel? And it's like also weird because you guys were on major labels. You're on independent labels. Like you really are living in a strange place wearing a lot of different hats. Do you guys think about that? Do you not worry about it?
I mean, we do. We actually feel like we thrive more on those like
weirder
intensely
places.
Mixed bills.
Yeah.
And we definitely kind of push our sets like song wise like in different directions. Like
depending
if we're on a heavier tour, we're
depending
like
on what it is, yeah.
Yeah, you know, on a heavier tour, depending on what kind of tour it is, sometimes we'll play our heavier songs, sometimes we'll throw some of the poppier ones in there.
Just
and like
stand out.
And like but then also on like poppier tours or like a ska tour, like, oh, put the heavy songs in there.
Yeah,
like, let's be the heavy band on the tour. Like, embrace the heavy band.
We put all the horn songs in.
Yeah, all the horn songs, yeah.
I thought you said porn songs.
All the porn songs.
I was like, I have not heard that side of your band.
I mean, it's cool doing tours with, you know, bands like Less Than Jake. That tour was really interesting because both bands were like, we don't know if this is going to work. But we're willing to give it a shot because, like, some of our fans are getting a little older. Obviously, their fans are getting, like, they have some older fans. They've been a band for fucking ever.
Yes.
And you know, we were definitely like, I don't know if it's going to work. But, you know, on this tour specifically, on Warped Tour, I have a lot of people come to the table. Like, I saw you on that Less Than Jake tour. I never heard you before. I'm a big fan now. And I'm like, nice. That's cool. And
it's one of those things. We call those the, like, it's like the... It's not great now, but it's great later kind of a tour where you play it and it's probably not going to go all that well and it's going to feel like a bad show.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, we did a tour with Rise Against and Bad Religion. Huge tour.
Yeah.
And we were the one of three on that tour. And at the time, it was kind of rough because everyone's there to see Rise Against and Bad Religion. No one knows who we are.
So they're not going to, like, go off and, like...
So it doesn't feel like a good show. You're playing in front of a lot of people, but
first
at the time...
First is always tough, too.
Yeah.
And at the time, we were used to, like, before that, we were headlining pretty good-sized tours for the size of our band. And, and it would be great shows. So switching to opener on a tour where everyone's just kind of standing there staring at you, it was, like, felt bad. But 100% the best tour.
Was really good for
we've ever
yeah,
done.
It was. It was great for us.
Long term, that's the kind of tour where every time that fan, that person that became a fan at that show comes to our show, yep. they're wearing the T-shirt from that tour.
There you go.
Yeah.
No matter what,
that happened with us opening for Simple Plan.
Yeah,
nice.
That was
that's
a big
awesome.
One for us in Europe.
Yeah.
You guys, I mean, that's a punk tour. You guys are kind of a punk band. Like,
yeah.
you guys also don't, like, you guys don't use in-ears.
No.
You don't play to a click track.
No.
Which is sort of...
As you can tell, if you see us live.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes, I've noticed.
Yeah.
I've noticed
fast.
things tend to get the pocket moves around a
yeah.
little bit. But it's kind of strange for you guys, like, for a band of, you know, with the major label ties, with the success... Yep. I'm surprised you guys haven't went down that road.
We did once.
Yeah.
Actually, on that Rise Against tour. And
we kind of had to because there were no
the
monitors on the tour.
Before that, it was the 18th.
They didn't have monitors on the tour?
No.
That's so weird.
Yeah, there were no wedges.
Yeah, they were,
everyone was on ears, so we were like, I guess we're getting ears.
He still uses wedges sometimes, or have them.
Yeah, he did. He did. I don't know what it was, but there... We had nothing.
It was all amphitheaters and stuff on that tour.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple like bigger rooms, but it was all amphitheaters too. But yeah, so one headlining tour and that one opening tour, we did ears and click.
And you went back.
And we went back.
That's yep. very rare.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine going back now because I don't know. I just like it sucks at first. Like the worst. I think the worst I've ever felt on stage was the first time I used in-ears.
Yeah.
I felt like I was just underwater or something. It was awful. But now I'm like, oh, my God, I could just hear everything so much better.
Yeah. Well, I think about it a lot more now.
On bad monitor days? Yeah.
Yeah.
On bad wedge days? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Like being, having that constant would be great. But actually, Warped Tour is the reason we stopped doing in-ears. Not because we had a bad experience with ears, but because... We were like, the next tour we did was Warped, and we were like, they like have the digital consoles, they save the monitor mixes, it's the same monitors every day, it's the same monitor guy every day,
true.
Like, we can count on it, let's just not bring our in-ear rig. Also, because we see people have problems with them, with frequency, wireless frequencies,
everybody
all kinds
it.
Of
yeah.
stuff. So we're just like, for this tour, we'll just do it, and we just never went back.
It just, I mean, there's something
Thanks,
about
Warped.
It, there's something about it where like... When we had in-ears in, like, everything was good playing-wise. Like, it was probably the tightest we've ever played. It was probably, you know, the most, obviously, in the pocket because we're all playing. Because we all had click.
Sure,
Wasn't
yeah.
just the drummer.
And, drummer knows,
and you know, we
know,
probably were, for a fan, probably the fucking best they've ever seen us. But, I don't know, just, like, energy-wise, like, for me, I always had a hard time really, like, throwing myself into the show. And even still, like, I don't know what it is. I need it to be loud and just offensive on stage and for me to get into it. Like, I'm still, like, one of the only guys in the band. Like, I don't even wear earplugs. Like, I just go to town. And I always had trouble singing with in-ears because when I still do it with wedges, I don't have a lot of my own vocal in the wedge because I found, like, if I could hear myself, I don't sing...
Like
I don't sing.
Kind of?
I don't sing correctly from my diaphragm enough,
oh.
and I lose my voice more when I can hear myself better, in a weird way.
Okay.
And I don't know what it is, but when I'm kind of trying to sing over the music, that's when my voice is the most consistent.
Right.
And and I know that's a very freak weird thing to say, but this
You're
is the way it's always been. Yeah.
Right. Wow. Okay. Well, thanks for the time and everything. I feel like I'm. Been accommodating your bus for like an hour. But, last question, with the Christmas tree farm and everything,
mm-hmm.
you guys have done some cover albums in the past. Could we expect a 4-year strong Christmas album at any point?
I would
we
love
did
that.
A Christmas cover.
We did one Christmas
did.
Song, but
yeah.
it actually was just me and Dan that did
yeah,
it for
was,
fun one
yeah,
day.
Yeah, it was like an acoustic weird thing.
I
it was like an acoustic kind of
consider,
a thing.
You could sell the CDs
the
yep.
only
at
thing,
the Christmas tree farm.
The only reason we've always been on the fence about it is because I love Christmas so much that I don't want to go and ruin every one of my favorite songs by putting a breakdown in the middle of it.
They say, you know, like career-wise, and I'm good friends with the August Burns Red guys who jump on tomorrow. I don't know if you know them. Some of my best friends, they did a Christmas album a few years back, and then I'm like, smartest thing we ever did.
Really?
We put it out every year. It gets
every year,
popular.
Yeah, yeah.
Every year people
yeah.
check
well, that's
it out.
Why
every people buy the vinyl.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Christmas hit is like
right.
the dream. Like,
dude,
if Mariah
Carey.
Mariah Carey.
Woo. Oh, yeah.
Like, you have a number one once a year, every year.
Right, but from a business perspective too, like those songs are old and they you don't have to pay, you know, publishing right, yeah. on them. They're just your like songs.
Public domain. And you don't have to like support the record for 2 years.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Just a month.
Yeah, just a month every year.
When 4 Year Strong does it, well, you won't have time this year. Next Christmas, just shout out to me for making it.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Being the liner notes.
Thank you very much, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So there it is with Dan and Alan of 4 Year Strong. Basically the same dude. I'm very happy. I was finally able to do this, and we were able to get together in one room, the three of us. It was a lot of fun. Really, really fun. The very awkward devil's penis that I had to stare at was, I don't know about fun. Check out the Lead Singer Syndrome Instagram. Yes, I took a picture of it so you can see exactly what I was up against. Yes, and go follow us too. Lead Singer Syndrome, yes, Lead Singer Syndrome on Instagram, at Lead Singer Syn, S-Y-N, on Twitter, Facebook, all that stuff. I'm at Shane Told if you want to follow me as well. And of course, make sure you're subscribed. Hit the subscribe button. I don't want you missing next week's episode. We got another all-new episode with an amazing guest. It will be out next week. So yeah, subscribe. Don't want you to miss it. And again, if you want to get in touch, if you want to give me more suggestions for the show, hit me up, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. And hey, if you like the show, feel free to write a review on iTunes. Tell a friend. Tell a loved one. Let's keep this thing going. Let's keep this thing growing. All right, I will leave you with a tune. And there's a lot of great ones. There's a lot of great songs. But if this is your first time for some reason hearing 4 Year Strong, this is a great place to start. Here is a banger, Wasting Time, on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. I'll see you next week.
Wasted. See ya!